You have three key meets throughout the year where you suit up. The rest of them, you don't. The rest of them, you're in your training costume competing.
Okay.
So, yeah, so all the dual meets I've done have been in my training costume. But in December or November, depending on your school, you do an invite and that's suited up. And then you do your conference, which is around now. So I have a younger sister who's flying back today from her conference. So the ACC and SEC conferences are all done now. I'll be flying to mine next week. And then you have NCAAs. So those two key meets before where you suit up are where you try and qualify.
Welcome to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, where we aim to give swimming the coverage and publicity it deserves. Every week, we celebrate the sport we love with amazing special guests and topics from around the swimming pool. And now, here are your hosts, Scott and Dan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott, and back with me yet again is my good friend, Dan. And on today's show, we are talking NCAAs and hopefully giving our British audience a little bit of an education.
Yeah, I'm so keen to dive into today's topic and learn all about it. It's something I wish I was able to do back when I was swimming, take part in it and be part of that atmosphere, because from the outside looking in, it looks absolutely incredible. Luckily for us, we've got a great guest on to give us the ins and outs of what it's all about, though.
Yes, we do. And it's a guest we've had on before. So please welcome back to the podcast for a second time, Alicia Wilson. Alicia, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
So last time we spoke, you were back in the UK just after Tokyo Olympics. You're now training over in America. You've been there for a little while. How's it going? Is it good to be back in California?
Yeah, it's really good. I was definitely back for a long time in the UK. So it's good to be back here and back into the swing of things and with my teammates, because I miss it a lot when I'm home.
I mean, last time we spoke to you was just after the Olympics. How long did you have off in the end? Did you have any rest at all? Or was it literally straight into training and competing again?
I'd say I had almost a month. I had quite a long time. I went to Greece and then came back, flew back to America, actually moved apartments. So spent that time getting myself moved, going to school and then started swimming again.
Did the training kind of kick straight off at high intensity, or was it a few months of taking it easy? Because it was, well, it was a really long cycle for the Olympics.
It did kick off pretty quickly, just because in the team everyone was all at different places. Some people had trained through summer, some people hadn't, like me. So we all kind of kicked off pretty quickly and got ourselves going so that we could all be kind of at one place at month two, I'd say, to really get the training going.
Yeah. But you were one of the few swimmers, obviously, because you're at NCAAs, you can't race ISL. So you kind of had that difference that I think some of the swimmers by the end of ISL were knackered. You were very much back into that routine of training. And it's been a pretty horrible winter over here in the UK, if I'm perfectly honest. Storms everywhere.
Yeah.
What's the difference in training in California compared to over here? Because you were over here for a while at Guildford beforehand.
Yeah, it's a lot nicer. I mean, we don't have indoor pools where we are. We have 250-meter outside pools. So even when it's cold outside, we're in the pool. And I'd say it drops coldest to 5 degrees in the morning, which is cold. But the bay where I am heats up super quickly. All the fog kind of rolls out very quickly. So we do get I'd say it was about 15, 16 degrees through the winter, which was nice. Still very hot. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been the nicest one I've had since I've been here. So yeah, it's
you
very
can
hot.
See why swimmers go out and train in the States.
Yeah, it makes me jealous every time I hear someone say it. It's like, oh, I wish I could do that. Has the training been hard over the winter months? Because we're coming out of the winter months now. Is it usually the meterage intensity quite high?
Yeah, it goes high. It becomes very non-traditional where I am. So we finished finals near the end of December. Probably the second week, actually. And then we stay till the 22nd of December. And we do a really hard block there. We then all go home to our families. And the motto is kind of, you know, you might not get better during that time, but don't get worse. Enjoy your time with your family. This isn't the time to be improving. It's the time to be with your family, get that emotional support, and then come back on the 2nd of January, and then we go to Hawaii for 10 days to get some sun, and that's when the fun training is with, like, the ocean and stuff like that. And it's really hard, but it's really rewarding, and, like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like a team bonding trip more than training. Okay. And then the season starts.
And essentially you're there building for today's topic, NCAAs, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for our British audience who might not know, what are the NCAAs?
Well, I guess it's kind of like the nationals or the trials, you know, whatever that swimmer considers to be the biggest event of them for the season. That's what NCAAs are for every single college athlete. Across all sports, you know, that's where funding comes from, your scholarships and stuff like that, is the school's performances at a collegiate championships. And swimming, you know, we're an NCAA sport, so that's the NCAA championships.
Interesting. Is there a qualification process you have to go through or anything like that?
Yeah, so your season starts, I guess, in August, but you have three key meets throughout the year where you suit up. The rest of them, you don't. The rest of them, you're in your training costume competing. So, yeah, so all the dual meets I've done have been in my training costume. But in December or November, depending on your school, you do an invite, and that's suited up. And then you do your conference, which is around now. So I have a younger sister who's flying back today from her conference. So the ACC and SEC conferences are all done now. I'll be flying to mine next week. And then you have NCAAs. So those two key meets before where you suit up are where you try and qualify. You don't qualify anywhere else. Those are your two meets. And it's all about rankings in the country.
Right. So it's literally two chances to get in.
Pretty much. I mean, you can do time trials and last chance things, but it's those two chances. So you want to get it done in your invite meet so early on in the season, because then you don't have to worry or taper. If you've already made it, you don't have to rest right now.
So you say it's rankings. Is it there a qualifying time you have to hit? Is it a fast qualifying time as well as rankings, or is it literally top 25 in the country go?
So it's very confusing, but what you have is you have an A standard and you have a B standard. That A standard is really quick. For example, the 200 IM was it's not going to mean much to the audience, but it was a 153.6. And I finished the season on a 153.5. So I was just inside of it. And there's normally about four of you. I went into NCs ranked third on that time. So not many of us had that A time. Each year it changes, but you don't normally have more than eight. It's shocking if you have more than eight, get that ace time. And then you have a B standard. And it's a bit like the B standard at the Olympics. It's a lot softer than that A standard, and a lot more people who will go to the meet will get that B standard. And what happens is if you have that B standard, you then get put into the rankings. If you have that A standard, you're automatically in. Okay. No one can tell you no. If you have that B standard, you then get ranked next week on Tuesday, not this coming one, the one after, because that's when all the conferences are done. And they take for men, it's roughly around the top 32 each event. For women, it's normally a little larger because there's more women that compete at the NCAAs. So it's about 42. And it fluctuates each year. So you have to be inside of that time. You have to have that B time, but you also have to be in the top 42.
Mm. Well, that was my next question, because there's separate NCAAs. There's one for women and then one for men. Why do they not mix and match?
It's weird. But honestly, college swimming in the US, most of it is split. Like, I don't train with the boys ever. Not one of my sessions is with them. And most teams are split. They're not combined teams. So every single sport in the US is kind of like that at collegiate level. So when I'm training at Legends, which is one of our pools, the boys will be at Speaker. We won't ever share the pool, unless there's like a water polo game and we can't have two pools to ourselves. So I guess that's just kind of the norm and how things are split. But also, like, our conferences are single gender in the Pac-12. Some of them are mixed, but our one is single gender. So it's only the invite that is mixed.
So I guess that's to do around funding. For like each team, you get your funding from your performance as a gender as a whole. Does that make sense? So it's like it's almost like a separate team. So the women's team is a team in its own entity, and then the guys' team is a team in its own entity as well.
Yeah, I mean, we have the same funding levels because that's our partner sport. But we are separate teams. We, like, all of our tops have normally they have women's on as well, and they have.
Chose a bad top for the example.
Yeah.
Wow, we're 10 minutes in. I've learned loads already. Yeah, I had no idea that it was all. So there's no chance of you guys even doing like mixed relays, because they're the most fun at the Olympics.
No. The relays that are in NCAAs are a 4x50 free, 4x50 medley, 4x100 free, 4x100 medley, and 4x200 free. And you can only swim four of them. So you can't swim all of them, but you can only swim four of them. Like the team can swim five, but you as an individual only get to go in four of them.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant a team. I got really confused. And this is all in short course yards as well. So these meets must like go through in a flash.
Yeah, like the splits for the 50-free for the women's are over in 20, 21 seconds. For the men, they're over in 18 seconds.
It's a bit fast. It's a little bit confusing from a British point of view, because I have never heard of yards, or I don't know how to convert yards to meters. Is there like a conversion system out there, so you know when you come to British trials later in the year, you know where you're at?
There are. I mean, SwimSwam have tried to do it. I guess there's a lot of kind of metrics that try to do it, but it is just so independent on you as a swimmer. I feel like I have had to really improve my turns, but my swimming is my strength, and so I convert a lot better long course than I do short course. So, I mean, to try and put it in perspective, Kate Douglas is one of the, like, stars in the NCAA, an incredible swimmer. Third at the Olympics on that 200 IM with a 209.0 or 209.1. She is 3 seconds quicker than me on a 200 IM yards. So there's a big gap between us. Yeah. But it's half a second long course. So to convert it is very difficult, because it plays to your strengths, you know. Though some swimmers have been brought up to really hammer those underwaters, and she's one of those that is just incredible. Or Maggie McNeil, she converts pretty well, but she is incredible underwater. And so the times are very different when you convert for each individual.
Yeah, I think Ryan Murphy, if I remember right, has won it like 4 years in a row way back when, in both the 100 and the 200 back, I think. So it is all on underwaters as well. It must be a super important meet. I mean, is it the most important meet of the calendar outside of Olympics and Worlds and stuff like that?
Yeah, it is. And a lot of these people that compete, that's their dream. You know, that's what they've grown up in. We hold camps in December for like younger swimmers, and that is their dream. They want to just become like a Cal athlete and go to a national championships and represent their team.
Get the slash.
Yeah. So it's like, it's a different cultural thing. You know, you grow up and you just, that's your dream. And we don't have that in the UK. Our dream is to make an international team long course, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say, can you imagine if that was the goal for like Bucks?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, the potential's there for it to be that big at Bucks.
Yeah.
Really?
Because I think it's slowly getting bigger, but nowhere near, obviously, NCAAs or anything like that. But it'd be amazing if it does get to that point of, you know, level pegging, you know? Yeah, really exciting.
So is NCAAs based around your individual performance, or is there a big kind of team aspect to it?
It's all about the team. So there's an A and a B final for each event, but relays are double points. So the importance is in your relays. And if you win, you score like four more points than the next person and like stuff like that. And it's constantly cumulative. so that by the end of the meet, you know, like, who the winner is. You know as you're going along. So it's tactical. It's hugely team-based. And all of your individual points score towards the team. So obviously you want to do well as an individual, but you want to get in that A final or that B final. You know, if you don't get in a final, you don't score any points. So my freshman year I went and I didn't score any points. I didn't contribute to the team at all. And that's hard, you know, like, to not contribute anything. But you try and get into those finals so that you can bring points back to your team.
Is there a limit on how many swimmers each college can qualify?
Yeah, so 18 swimmers maximum, but it's swimming and diving. So divers can't score as many points because they can't do the amount of events that we do. You know, there's just not that many in a diving competition. So they count as half of a person. So you could bring two divers for one swimmer. So it's all about your combination. And so our diving team isn't as established as our swimming team. So we don't tend to have any divers qualify. You know, we have the odd one every few years. But I'd say that 18-person limit is very hard to reach. We normally go, our best teams, we've gone with 12 or 13. So
it's not a chance of, like, there being 20 A qualifying swimmers and two of them have to get left at home. That doesn't really happen.
Not with the automatic time, but there is, there are times, like Stanford in 2019, the girls team, they had 20 swimmers qualify for NCs and they had to leave two of them at home.
Oh, blimey. Okay. I'm trying to figure out what the point system is. So you say there's an A final and a B final. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you earn more points in the A final than you do in the B final. So how many points do you get for a win in the A final, for example?
So you'd get, like, it depends, but you'd get anywhere. I think it's like 64 points or something like that. If you're finaling in the A and winning, I think that's though for relays. And it halves for the individual. And then you go, and then you drop four down. And then it's like one, two, you know, like drops a point each. And then the difference between making an A and a B final is, again, 4 points. So they make that gap a little bigger. So you're far better going lights out in the morning and crashing out in that A final. Doesn't matter how slow you go, you get more points.
Yeah, so that was my next question. Is it better to come last in an A final than it is first in a B final? It is. More incentive of making an A final makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and so, like, morning swims are so fast, so much faster than you could imagine. And a lot of people go slower in the night because the goal is literally just getting that final.
Blimey. Are we still following, Dan? Are we still following? There's a lot to take in.
There's a lot to take in, but I'm a bit like, oh, I wish I was still swimming. I wish I just went over for America and just had a little dabble in it, you know, just for one week.
Coming over from the UK, was it hard to pick up the system and the scoring and how it works? Because it's alien to a British audience. Mm.
It's definitely hard to pick it all up. It's harder to understand the weight and the importance. It's, you know, I will always have British champs in my mind and wanting to compete and make an Olympic team or a senior team. And you have to generate that same emotion for the NCAAs. You know, you have to be successful. You have to really care about it. And that care has come for me through my team. But as a freshman, I didn't really understand it. You know, it was kind of a short course meet, and short course meters, even in the UK, it's, if you have a bad short course season, it's fine because the more important one's long course. And that was the hardest thing, not so much picking up the knowledge of it because you're constantly around it. It was picking up that emotional care.
It sounds like there's a lot of pressure with there only being two meets, of two meets to qualify for NCAAs. There seems to be a lot of pressure on shoulders of each swimmers, which is probably the reason why America do so well at, you know, trials just before Olympics and stuff like that. Is that maybe, do you reckon that's part of the reason why they make it so pressurized?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think they do that trials to worlds or trials to Olympics so well with such a short time period, because that's what conference to NCAAs is. You know, I think that's why I've managed to be able to do champs so well after tapering for that, because they, you know, my coach has been here for 31 years, and for 31 years she's had that, okay, some of you are going to rest for Pac-12s and try and go as fast as you can so that 3 weeks later you can compete at NCAAs and then go as fast as you can again. There's definitely a skill to it.
Yeah.
Oh man, you could take a full deep dive into that. How are you managing around this season upcoming? So you've got NCAAs on the horizon, and then we've got Worlds, Commies, Europeans, all in one. Is that a target for all of them?
So I got named to the Commonwealth Games team, so that's definitely a focus. And I think the attitude that I have and that I've always had around champs is get NCAAs done, have that as my focus, and then move that focus very quickly and do as best as I can at trials, and then see how that landscape is for the rest of the season. You know, I think everything rests on trials. So yes, I would like to make all those meets, but I don't really think about what's next until after NCAAs is done and then after trials is done. Otherwise, I look and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a lot for me.
Yeah. We're looking at it and we're trying to plan what we're going to do for this summer. It's just like, I have no idea. I wouldn't want to be a swimmer right now. Is there a strategy in your mind for transitioning from NCAAs to British champs so quickly? Is it a case of you fly over to the UK and it's like a complete system reset?
I haven't booked my flights yet. I'm a little late on that. I'm late on that. I'd normally have it done, but with it moving around so much, you know, 1 minute was cancelled and then it was like, do I come back? You know, and then I'd had those conversations, and then the minute decisions were starting to be made, they were there again. So I haven't actually booked my flights yet. Which I will, but I just, like, again, I've really had to compartmentalize. And I guess that is my strategy, to get the most out of the present moment and the present meet, and then focus on the next one, because they all blend in together. They all, you know, if you do well at one, that sets you up well for the next. And that's kind of my attitude. I try to take that, like, planning. Yes, I do think that long-term planning is important, but I think performing in the present moment is far more important.
Oh, I agree with you on that one. And actually, we're going to look at the future a little bit. So obviously, Commonwealth Games is a home games. I imagine your family is going to be able to watch you swim, unlike Tokyo. Are you looking forward to that?
And America.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. They haven't watched me for a long time, like at my main meets, because they haven't been able to. So I think the last time they properly watched me at a meet was WOGS in 2019. So it's a long time ago.
Yeah. Kind of final question around NCAAs. Is there something that could be done over here in the UK, or should be done, to almost replicate that system? Because obviously it works. You spoke about, they've got this, your coach has 31 years of knowing how to almost double taper. It's an acquired skill. Is there something that can be done over here, or does it work so well in America because it's ingrained into swimming culture over there?
I think it can definitely be replicated. I think there has to be a bigger and better culture around swimming and being okay with swimming and not making teams, but swimming at that level of making an international team. And more established, you know, I think why America does it so well is because there's so many universities that are at that high caliber. You look at the rankings right now and you have Alabama, Virginia, Cal, Stanford, Texas, like, you could list them off for days. And I get there's a size element to that, but I think that's where the route has got to be targeted first, I guess, you know, before even thinking about the meet. You know, it is just one NCAAs. It's not like Bucks do with lots of little, like lots of them, like a short course one, a long course one. You know, it's very much like, this is the grand finale. And I think for that to happen first, there's got to be a more established base and not kind of the monopolies over certain teams.
Yeah, I think we're very time-based over here, whereas NCAAs is a very much a team factor. That must be the most important part of that competition, just the fact that you're around your team, building morale. And I bet you don't even look at times. You're just looking for positions.
Yeah, I mean, the USC meets we do in previous years, they turn the scoreboard off and they just have the place on when we race against them. And you actually swim way quicker, but it's really fun and you have no idea what time you went. But it's all about your hand getting to the wall. And I think that's, I mean, it was hugely important at Tokyo. It wasn't about the times, you know, a lot of the times were slower. And it was about getting your hand to that wall because that's all that mattered. And I think that that attitude is so much more enjoyable than a time focus because, you know, I get so fixated on that time. But just trying to race and become that little child again that you loved just racing other people, I think takes you a lot further in the sport.
Yeah. Have you got any advice for any 16, 17-year-olds who are thinking about going over to America?
I think really do your research. You know, it is a long-term investment and you're there for 4 years. So really do your research. And I think more than anything, if you are lucky enough to be able to go and visit them before you kind of commit to somewhere, you'll get that feeling with it. You know, I think you know when you make that right decision. But I would encourage going to multiple ones and having a look. It's very easy to go to one and get swept away because the resources are just incredible. But if you can form that kind of comparison with the other schools, I think it does definitely help you. But also, like, do your research. Know what is good, what is bad. Have a look at those, you know, if long course swimming is still what you want to do as well, look into the teams and see, you know, are there any Olympians? Are there any people that head back? You know, I was lucky enough that I have some foreigners that head back for trials. I have some girls from Australia, Israel, the Netherlands, Croatia, Hungary, Denmark on my team, and we're all in that same boat together. And it's so much less daunting doing it together than by yourself. So I would really do your research. Yeah.
So you'd recommend Cal in like a heartbeat then, clearly.
I would. I mean, even just Terry alone, but also the team dynamic and the training style is very different. You know, I don't really train over 5K in my sessions. It's more kind of based around enjoyment and unconventional ways of getting better. You know, like at Christmas when I said we did that hard training block, it's we put the boom of the pool at 15 meters and we'll do sets like really quick, maybe like three lapper, get out over the boom, run over the boom, jump into the other pool and go under over all those lane ropes and then come back underwater. You know, and it's fun, but it's so much harder than doing 300s or pace and stuff like that. I feel like I'm going to pass out when I do it, you know? It's so but it's so enjoyable. And then, you know, Fridays we do like skip on the side of the pool and then she blows the whistle. You have to go run in, swim to halfway and back, then get out, jump again, close your eyes, then jump it, you know, like those kind of things. And she cues you as you do it, so you don't know what's coming next. And I think that is why I love it, because I get to get better in a fun way that I haven't experienced for a long time.
And imagine with the sun as well, being outside, just living a dream, surely.
Yeah. You should see the rain outside this window right now. It's ridiculous. Well, Alicia, thank you so much for coming on to this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I've learned a lot about NCAAs. I think the system and the scoring itself is, well, yeah, like you said, is alien to the British audience. And it's good to get your head around, because I know on Twitter, on all the swimming articles over the next few weeks when NCAAs are going on, it will be everywhere. So it's good constant, for a British audience to almost be educated in what is going on over in the States.
Yeah,
it's exciting, and I think for anyone that gets that opportunity, take it. You're not going to have anything like that again in your life, and yeah, it's special. So,
Yeah, I really wish I could do it. And listening to everything you've just said, like, never mind, you know, in another life, I guess. Yes, thank you very much, Lisa, for explaining all of that. I've learned so much as well.
And best of luck.
Thank you.
Good luck. Hopefully it goes well. Yes. So that just about rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or Spotify. And me and Dan will be back in 7 days' time.
Yeah, thank you for listening, everyone. We'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.